Yadi.
If.
Shuhu. There are. Bahava. Many. Loke. In this world. Shastaraha. Rulers or controllers. Dandadarinaha. Who punish the sinful men. Kasya. Of whom? Shatam. There may be. Na. Not. Va. Or. Kasya. Of whom? Mrityu. Distress or unhappiness. Cha. And. Amritam. Happiness. Eva. Certainly. Va. Or. So translation. If in this universe there are many rulers and justices who disagree about punishment and reward, their contradictory actions will neutralize each other, and no one will be punished or rewarded. Otherwise, if their contradictory acts fail to neutralize each other, everyone will have to be both punished and rewarded. It's very interesting. So you can repeat, if in this universe
there are many rulers and justices
who disagree about punishment and reward, their contradictory actions will neutralize each other, and no one will be punished or rewarded. Otherwise, if their contradictory acts fail to neutralize each other, everyone will have to be both punished and rewarded. So, purport by Srivan Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki, Jad. Because the Yamadutas had been unsuccessful in carrying out the order of Yamaraj, they doubted whether Yamaraj actually had the power to punish the sinful. Although they had gone to arrest Ajamil, following Yamaraj's order, they found themselves unsuccessful because of the order of some higher authority. Therefore, they were unsure of whether there were many authorities or only one. If there were many authorities who gave different judgments, which could be contradictory, a person might be wrongly punished or wrongly rewarded, or he might be neither punished nor rewarded. According to our experience in the material world, a person punished in one court may appeal to another. Thus, the same man may be either punished or rewarded according to different judgments. However, in the law of nature or the court of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there cannot be such contradictory judgments. The judges and their judgments must be perfect and free from contradictions. Actually, the position of Yamaraj was very awkward in the case of Ajamil, because the Yamadutas were right in attempting to arrest Ajamil, but the Vishnadutas had baffled them. Although Yamaraj, under these circumstances, was accused by both the Vishnudutas and Yamadutas, he is perfect in administering justice because he is empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, he will explain what his real position is and how everyone is controlled by the Supreme Controller, the Personality of Godhead. So, Yadi Syurvaho Loke Shashtarodandadaranaha Kashashyatam Nava Kasha Richus Cham Rita Evava. So Omagana Timadandasha Gananjana Shlakya Chakshur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Shi Guruvena Maha. So what we have in the modern day and world is not an absolute understanding of what is justice or what is law of God, but everything has become relativized.
according to the modern fashion.
And that is because we don't actually follow the proper system of governance.
There's many different systems of governance we have in the world today.
Many different systems. What we have, let's say what we have in New Zealand, what is that called? You don't know.
Democracy?
No. There's no democracy in the whole world. Did you know that? There's not one single democracy in the world.
How's that?
Does anyone know what I mean by that? What? It's oligarchy, yeah. It's an oligarchy, but it's a combination. I'll explain. I'll explain what I mean, but there's no democracy in the world. Because basically you have the Americans going around trying to make the whole world safe by giving everybody democracy. But it's not democracy. Because democracy, there was only perhaps one or two democratic states. Not even completely democratic in the history of mankind. One is the state of Athens in Greece, many, many years ago. They had more of a democracy. What I meant by democracy, democracy means the movement, the rule of by the people. So every day, all the people, that is the legal citizens, this is an interesting point, the legal citizens would vote on the laws. And because, as we know, kalo shudra samavat, just about everybody in Kali Yuga is a Shudra, the laws would change every day. That's what happens when you have like a really widespread democracy. Because basically everyone is Shudra and they're just voting on what pleases them that particular day. A Shudra is interested in what pleases them right here and now. A Vaishya is interested in what will please them in the future. And a Brahmin is interested and what will get him out of the material world, and a devotee is interested in what will please the Supreme Personality of God. So you have a real mix. I mean, for example, the Kali Yuga Brahmanas, they're like the Pandas who are interested in money. Like if you go to Vrindavan today, the Brahmanas will attack you and for money. There's some places in Govardhan, if devotees who went with us to Govardhan, and they'll remember that I warn them, when you go through here, just run through this area. That was the Chakaleshwara Mahadev. Remember that? I said, offer your obeisances before you go there, but not when you're there. And because that's where the Brahmanas attack you. So you, so-called Brahmanas, so you run through, and they're grabbing the women, and they're, you know, pulling on your dhoti and everything like that. And so this is, because everyone's Shudra in Kali Yuga. So anyway, getting back to the point. So in Athens, they had this so-called democracy where everyone voted. It was an absolute disaster. And actually, it wasn't a complete democracy either, because it was only the free citizens who were allowed to vote. The majority of people were not free citizens. What I mean by that is the people who are captives from other countries were not allowed to vote. People of a different race were not allowed to vote. And you ladies were not allowed to vote. It's only recently, actually, in the Western world that ladies have gotten the vote. Did you know that? Like, if you go 100 years ago, it wasn't like that. And, you know, in America also, we had different races. Like, the black race wasn't allowed to vote. It wasn't even allowed to be free in many parts of the country until recently. So, anyway, so that's pretty much as close as you'll ever get to a real democracy, what they had in Greece. And it didn't work. So what we have in the Western world, at least like New Zealand, Australia, of course, sometimes it's considered a constitutional monarchy. In other words, you have a queen there, but she doesn't really do any damn thing. It says she's ceremonial. That's the same thing in the UK. You understand? That's a constitutional monarchy. In other words, it's a different type. It's not democracy either. What it is the queen is a figurehead, and you have elections, but you're not really voting on the laws, you're voting on the people. So it's called a representative democracy. And then you have checks and balances in the government, You have a legislative, executive, and judicial branch. You understand what I mean by that? And you study the theory of government. Executive means like the president or the prime minister, depending on which government you're talking about. And then you have your legislative, which is the parliament. And sometimes you have your upper level of parliament, which is in the UK, it's the House of Lords. And they're not actually elected usually, they're just lords. Lords and ladies. And then you have the House of Commons in the UK, right? And they're the elected people. And so, but anyway, so even in the modern world, when you have elections, they're not really based upon the qualifications so much of the people, but rather, like you said, oligarchy, which means that the rich people control everything, because they can actually determine who runs for election, how much they have to pay to advertise themselves in the media. Like you see nowadays, the people run for election, they have bumper stickers. You know what a bumper sticker is? No, you people in Fiji don't know what that is. That's something, you put the picture of your candidate on the bumper of your car. You have such respect. Yeah. Or you put them on your shirt like that. Vote for, whoever it is. Ratu something. They do it here, too.
Yeah.
So that's completely disrespectful. I mean, I wouldn't want my picture on the bumper of someone's car or on someone's shoes. Very disrespectful. So what you have is the, it's also called plutocracy. That's another word used. That's a Latin word, which means controlled by the upper class or the rich people. So it's really the rich people who are controlling the democracies, which is quite interesting. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada said, democracy means rule by the vaishyas. Because you'll see, in any country practically, that the leader is cozying up, I don't know if you know that word, with the business people. Right? I mean, just like yesterday, I was seeing some businessman. He was telling me, oh, when I go here, very rich man. And he was bragging, when I go to Nepal, the king hosts me. The king of Nepal. Or when I go here, I'm received by the president of this country. There's another businessman I know in the United States. He's a Greek businessman, very wealthy man, billionaire. He's a friend of mine. Don't ask me what his name is, because I'm not going to tell you. It would ruin the friendship.
Yeah.
So sannyasis are making friends with businessmen now, too. So it's really Kali Yuga. Like Lord Chaitanya refused to see the king, King Prataparudra, just because he had the name king, even though he's a devotee. And Kali Yuga sannyasis, they're hanging out with businessmen. Anyway, so, just see how things have degraded in the last 500 years. So, very, very wealthy. I mean, he makes anybody you know here extremely poor. He's a multi-billionaire. And so he was telling me how he goes to a country and immediately the president or prime minister comes out to receive him on a red carpet. Not because he's a dignitary, just because he has money. So what do they say? Money talks, everyone else walks. Did you ever hear that saying before? Yeah, cash talks, everybody else walks. Or another saying we have in America, in God we trust, everybody else pays cash. You ever hear that one before? In God we trust. Yes. So anyway, so it's actually the systems we have nowadays, practically all over the world, is the rich people are actually controlling everything. I mean, it's a fact. Money talks. I mean, if you have wealth, then you can go see the president, prime minister, and he'll offer obeisances to you, whatever. That's just the way life is. So that's controlled by the vaishyas, which is really not an ideal situation because then the people are exploited for the financial gain of the vaishyas. The laws are passed and everything like that for the financial gain of the vaishyas. And then you have communism, which is controlled by the shudras. Because Karl Marx, anyone's heard of Karl Marx before? He had this Communist Manifesto, and his idea was that ultimately the workers of the world would revolt. Has anyone heard of this before? Of course you did. You come from a communist country, previous communist country. So there everyone was a devotee of Karl Marx. And so the workers of the world revolt, and they'll take charge, and everybody will get an equal salary. That didn't work. The reason that communism doesn't work, communism is also an economic system in addition to a political system. I mean, I'm speaking very broadly now about the whole thing. The reason the economic aspect of communism doesn't work is because when everyone gets paid equally, no matter what your talents are, how you work or how you don't work, guess what happens? Everyone becomes lazy. That's the problem. Because there has to be some incentive. At least with the Vaishya system, people have an incentive to work. You know, you work more, you get paid more, you get more education, you get paid more. Honey ball, you become a doctor, you become rich. Right, doctor? If you become a surgeon, super rich. If you become a bone surgeon, you don't want to know how rich you become, right? Of course, in the Vedic system, the doctors, they did everything for free. Nowadays, you have to have insurance companies. The insurance companies become rich, right? The doctors, they're driving around in Mercedes. You have a Mercedes? No. Or BMW or Rolls Royce. No, he's a good doctor. He does a lot of charitable work and everything like that, and he gives his money to Krishna. So that's a good doctor. So you have this system controlled by the Vaishyas, but at least people have an incentive to work hard and produce more things. At least it's like that. But in communism, the problem was that everybody got the same salary, even whether you're a doctor or a lawyer or whatever. And you basically try to get by with the least possible work. And you didn't produce and you didn't really care. Let's say all the tractors would used to stay in the fields and they would rust. And nobody really cared about it because who cares? You're going to get your money anyway. The people didn't take care. So communism is not really a good system. So the Vedic system is based on Varnashram, which is actually the perfect system, Vedic system of governance. Because it's based, first of all, on the Brahmanas, who are the heads of society, natural gurus of society, but it's the Kshatriyas who do the management. And the Kshatriyas are advised. Just like in Lord Ram's time, it's not that Lord Ram, was an absolute monarch. There were checks and balances. He had his guru, Vashishta. And so whenever he wanted to do something, he took advice from Vashishta. And Vashishta made the ultimate decision for Ram, and Ram went along with it. Very, very simple. And in that system, if the king didn't agree with the Brahmanas, the Brahmanas would kill him. Like in the case, not with a sword, but like in the case of Venu. Once upon a time, there was this king, Venu. Anyway, let me tell the whole story. His father's name was Anga. And he had Venu as a son because the mother was actually the daughter of fear personified. So the sons usually take after the wife, right? You've experienced that with Giriraj? Takes after your wife. So... And the daughters, they take after the man or the husband. So this Vena, he took after his mother, and because she was the daughter of fear or death personified, he was a very cruel person. He would kill his friends when they went out to play. You know, they'd go out to play, and his mother would say, "Where are all your friends, dear?" And he said, "I killed them all." Nice kid, isn't it? So anyway, his father was a great devotee. So his father thought, this is a bad son. But actually, he's a good son. Because this gives me an excuse to get that whatever out of here. So he went and took sannyas, went back to Godhead. The father went back to Godhead. So sometimes if there's some disturbance, it's actually an impetus in devotional service, like in Prabhupada's case. So this Vena, he became the king. And he was so cruel, he said he was God, he tortured the Brahmanas, whatever. And the Brahmanas killed him. They chanted, not that they killed him with a sword, they chanted a mantra, die. And he died. And then there was no king. That's a problem. Where there's no king, then the criminals will run around. It's actually good to have an absolute authority in the kingdom. Like I said, the present system that we have in New Zealand, Australia, America is a terrible system because justice is really relative rather than absolute, and people will appeal, as Prabhupada said, in the court, and court cases will go on for year after year after year, and the criminals will never get punished. So that's terrible. But it's better to have a king, or the king is actually something like a military governor, like you have here. That's kshatriya. That's the system. And then what happens is the criminals, they commit some crime, they're made to run around the army base, you know, like they do here. They're punished immediately. Otherwise, if you're not punished immediately, if you go on for 10,000 years, what's the use? Then criminals get away with murder. And the police, the prison becomes a revolving door, has a revolving door on it. That means you go in, you come out, you go in, you come out. And the prison becomes a place for learning how to be a better criminal. That's what the prisons are. The recidivism rate, that means the return rate, is very high in the prisons. So let's get back to the story about Baina. So the criminals started to run around after Baina was killed. Everything was a disaster. And so they didn't know what to do. But then the Brahmanas had a very good idea. They thought, you know, because you can't just appoint anybody as king. They need to have the right genes. Everyone has a psychophysical nature, as we've experienced. That we all have certain psychophysical natures, like Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. And if you use that nature in serving Krishna, you become perfect. So they wanted to have someone with a kingly nature. But no one was around. So that's why sometimes in the Vedic system, you would actually, when making marriages, you would consider what sort of offspring would come. In other words, you'd be interested in breeding. That's called eugenics. You don't like that, eugenics. You know, eugenics is something that Hitler used improperly. You understand? Hitler was very much in favor of eugenics, you know, breeding people. But he wanted to get rid of certain breeds and breed other breeds of people. And he got his ideas from America. I don't know if you know that. Because in America they were, during the early 1900s, they were involuntarily sterilizing people who they didn't want to breed. This is heavy. People don't know that. Hitler got his ideas from America and also the UK, because they were both doing that. God bless the Queen. So, but in the Vedic system, there was concern for eugenics. That is, breeding proper leaders of society. So that's why it was very much a consideration. Krishna. It was very much a consideration who would marry who. You understand? Very much a consideration. Therefore, you have these injunctions that a brahmana can marry someone of a lower class, but the woman cannot marry someone of a lower class than her. There's pratilom and anulom marriage. In other words, a brahmin could marry a kshatriya lady, but a kshatriya lady could not marry a shudra man. So there are all sorts of considerations for breeding. So in the case of this particular problem, where Vena had died, how could you breed? Because he died. You know, someone's dead, you can't breed him usually. But in those days, they knew the science of cloning. Nowadays, they talk about cloning, right? I was just reading in this magazine, National Geographic, how they want to bring back the dinosaurs. You understand? Particularly this thing called the woolly mammoth. You've heard of the woolly mammoth before? In Siberia, they've discovered these old, they're like the ancestors of the modern elephants. They've discovered frozen in ice, you know, whole, big, big, like monster elephants with a lot of hair on them. These are called woolly mammoths. You heard of that before? Anybody who studied? So they have the genetic material. So what they want to do is take the genetic material and clone it, you know, put it into someone else, an elephant's egg or something like that, and then get these things, get these animals that are now extinct and bring them back to life. That'd be interesting, isn't it? You have dinosaurs walking around, and of course it would be good if they had people from Satya Yuga walking around. That would be really nice. You know, great sages, clone them. So anyway, so the sages at that time, they knew how to clone people. So they took the genetic material from Vena, and they were able to extract the bad genes too. That's pretty interesting, isn't it? It's like, you know, you don't want GMO food, right? You know what GMO food is? Genetically modified. So they had a GMO person. So they were able to take away the bad genes, and the bad genes became a person. His name was Bahuka. Bahuka means in Sanskrit, sit down and behave yourself. So, so they, anyway, so the first person to get, you know, they, it's described they churned the body, which means they did something with the genetic material. And then Bahuka came out. You know, real low class, all the bad qualities came out first, the bad genes. And then they churned again, or they did their genetic manipulation. And then Vena came out. And I'm sorry, then Prithu and his wife Archie. So you got two for the price of one. You got two for the price of one. Prithu Maharaj, who was a incarnation of Krishna, even got an incarnation of Krishna that way. And Archie, an incarnation of the goddess of fortune. It's interesting, isn't it? This cloning technique. Also, previous time it was used too. It was used in Mithila. Mithila, of course, was where who appeared? Janaka and who? Sita Devi. So Mithila, it's interesting, Mithila. You talk about Janaka. That many years, there were many Janakas in the kingdom. There was Janaka the first, Janaka the second, Janaka the third, Janaka the fourth, fifth. Like you have King Edward the first, King Edward the second. So what happened was that the original Janaka, he wasn't called Janaka at that time, he was called King Nimi. There's a story in the Bhagavatam. He was King Nimi. So King Nimi had a guru. His guru was Vashishta. Okay. And King Nimi, he wanted to have go out in Sankirtan. Have a ceremony, you know, Sankirtan performance. Want to go out in Mahasankirtan. But his guru said, wait until I come back from the heavenly planets because I'm doing a sacrifice for them. And because the guru was going to the heavenly planets because the demigods paid more money for sacrifices. You know, if you want to make money, you do it at the heavenly planets. You don't do it in some village. Well, in the village, you get just a little kava or bananas or something. But if you do it for Indra, you get mountains of gold. So Vashishta went to the heavenly planets, but his disciple Nimi decided to do the sacrifice without his guru. To go on Harinam without his guru. And what happened is the guru came back, Vashishta came back, and he was so angry with his disciple, he cursed him to die. He said, you'll become nirdeha. It means without a body. And then the disciple cursed his guru. But Maharaj Nimi said to the guru, Vashishta, you die also, Guru Dev. And they both died. It's a nice relationship with guru, isn't it? So what happened is that they preserved Nimi's body, and the same thing with Vena. They churned the body, and out came Janaka the First. And that's why Mithila is called Mithila. It's from Maitri. Maitya, which means in Sanskrit, I don't know what it means in Hindi, but in Sanskrit it means to churn. Churning. You understand? Same thing, similar word in Hindi? Matan. So from Maitreya comes Matan in Hindi. So very, very similar. So anyway, they turned, and Janaka the first came out, and all the kings after that were called Janaka, and it was called Mathila. That's a little history for you Ramayan fans there. So in any case, getting back to the whole point, is that it was important to have kings of the proper nature, and breeding was very, very important. However, even if someone was born in a royal family and he didn't have the qualities to be king, then they would pick someone else to be king who had the qualities. And there's many stories about that. I mean, for example, king not only had to have the kingly mentality, but the king also had to be strong. He couldn't be blind. Like in the case of Dhritarashtra, even though he was the eldest, he couldn't become the king because he was blind. And one of the requirements of being a king is if you have a battle, you have to be at the forefront of the battle. You can't just be controlling all the drones. You know what a drone is? That's an unmanned aerial vehicle like they have now. Like what the Americans do, they control these. You know what I'm talking about? They have the remote control. It's like a video game. They sit in some place in the United States and they have these planes that have missiles on them and they kill people all over the world. You know, these are... Anyway, it's like I have in Gobernana, quadcopter. I take pictures. I don't kill people. But it's a similar concept. So the king would have to go out in the forefront of the battle, and he would get hurt sometimes. Therefore, the king would be very reluctant to fight, right? I mean, obviously, if you're going to be having to fight yourself, you're not going to start a war unless there's a reason to start a war. Just like now, and you have this North Korea problem. You know about this? It's not a king, it's, you know, the great leader. If that's called nepotism, it's a different thing. You know what nepotism is? Nepotism is that even if your family is unqualified, you appoint them to all the positions in government. That's called nepotism. It's a fancy word you can all learn. That even if your son is a jerk, he becomes the next king or leader. And that's what they've done in North Korea. Isn't it? You know, the guy's an idiot. I mean, they're all idiots anyway. All the leaders, not everybody. But, you know, you appoint someone and he's practically causing an atomic war in the world, you know, challenging, torturing his people. The people are actually starving to death in the country. It's the opposite of Ram Raj. In Lord Ram's kingdom, he was so concerned. Nobody was allowed to starve or anything like that. Everybody had to follow their dharma. There's a story in the Ramayana that there was one Shudra who was trying to imitate a Brahmana and follow the Brahman dharma, but he was unqualified and he was creating problems in the kingdom. So Lord Ram personally went out and cut the guy's head off. And he was so concerned, Lord Ram was so concerned with the welfare of the citizens that when Sita Devi was questioned and it was interfering with his rule of the kingdom, he sent his own wife away. So that's the point, that the king, a real leader, would consider all the citizens to be like his children, praja, everyone who was born in the kingdom, including the animals too. So that's the sort of leader we need. Now, also, the leader has to follow the absolute authority, which is the authority of the Vedas. Like, you can't change the laws of God. Like, nowadays, even in the churches, they're discussing different things they want to change, like different types of marriages. I don't know if I should mention in class. You know, previously, you know, marriage was between a man and a woman. And now they say, well, we have to change. Change now, marriage can be between two men or two women. And then later on, between a man and a horse. First a female horse and then a male horse. So anyway, so, you know, so they change it. Just like I was speaking to one big, big businessman yesterday. He said, you Hare Krishnas, you have these rules and regulations and it's interfering. Remember that? It's interfering with your preaching. You know, big businessman here in Fiji. He said, if you really want to be successful, you know, this stuff about, you know, no meat, fish, or eggs, you know, you should have, like, wings for Sunday feast. You know, he didn't say that exactly, but can you imagine you sit down with a Hare Krishna Sunday feast, you know, pass me a wing or a leg? You know, you're back to Cannibal Island after a while, right? As the Fijis called the Cannibal Islands because the cannibals, they were here, and they ate all the ministers who came. Minister prasad. What's for the Sunday feast? Oh, minister. So the religions and the governments, they're all keep changing the moral standards and the rules, not understanding there is some absolute standard that's mentioned in the Vedic literatures. Particularly, Prabhupada said, the Manusamhita. And there's even standards of punishment in the Manusamhita, that if someone does a particular crime, they have a particular punishment. I mean, for example, there's one punishment in the Manusamhita that if one commits child abuse, they have a particular part of their body cut off and they have to walk to the sun with it and die. And you don't have too many child abusers in society. So one may say, this is harsh, cruel, and unusual punishment. In most countries, there's actually a rule in the Constitution, you can't have cruel and unusual punishment, right? But the people are suffering because the criminals are not taken care of. And also the criminals are suffering because they have their karma. There's like nowadays, like the capital punishment. Very few countries have capital punishment now. Capital punishment means you kill a murderer, basically. But if a murderer commits murder, which is what a murderer does, then a murderer will have to suffer karma. So by having capital punishment, you eradicate his karma. And then also you free the citizens from the danger of having him around or having to maintain him for the rest of his life. You know, so the Vedic standards of judgment should be adhered to. But therefore, you need a king and a Brahmin. Brahmins above the king in order to have that particular system. Otherwise, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. Otherwise, you have the Vaishyas, the businessmen controlling everything, or you have the Shudras, low-class, sense-gratifiers, controlling everything. It just doesn't work. So the system that we want to have is actually the Varnashram system. Not absolute monarchy, not theocracy. Theocracy is another problem, where you have the Brahmanas control the government. That's a horrible system. That's in Iran, you know? In Iran, that's a theocracy, more or less a theocracy, where the mullahs, mullah means a Muslim religious leader. It doesn't mean money. In slang English, mullah means money. Did you know that? Never heard that before. I'm teaching you some slang English. Mullah. They say, give me some mullah. So it's like, give me some pice. Same thing. So they have the mullahs controlling the government, and the citizens are getting exploited, and it's crazy. It's a crazy situation. And they're not following the Shastra either, because they speculate upon what the Shastra says. So, the Shastra Vidamitsrija Vartate Kamakarita. That Krishna says in the Gita that if one doesn't follow Shastra, na param gatim, asukam, na param gatim, this is a verse from the Bhagavad Gita, then one can't be happy nor achieve the supreme destination. So we must have a government based upon Shastra and controlled by the Kshatriyas, advised by the Brahmanas. And in that way, think people will be happy. We want Ram Raj back again. But the problem is, Prabhupada said, in India especially, they ask for Ram Raj without Ram. They want Ram Raj with Ravan in charge. It doesn't work like that. So any quick questions or comments? Yeah.
Before leaving the planet, Prabhupada said that 50% of what he wanted to do was left. And he made
Varnashram.
How did he achieve this Varnashram in present day?
Well, at least we can start in our movement that we have a system of hierarchy. You know, we're a religious society, so obviously the brahmanas have to be in charge, but you need a division of labor. You need the brahmanas, and then you need administrators in our movement. And one thing that happens in our movement, I'm glad you asked that question, is that when you mix the administrators with the brahmanas, or in other words, the people do both functions, it creates great confusion in people's minds. It's a conflict of interest. You know a conflict of interest? Like in any business, you have a conflict of interest policy. So, in other words, let's say you come to a Hare Krishna temple, and this is not to criticize anyone, it's just a very theoretical point. You come to a Hare Krishna temple and you say, oh, I want some spiritual advice. And you go to the temple president. And the temple president is thinking, we really need someone to give donations. Or we really need someone to do aartis. I mean, that's all right. It's a good thing. So, but at the same time, he has this other conflict. What about this person's spiritual life? So it's very difficult to balance the two. You follow what I'm saying? So we need people who are purely brahmanas, and we need people who are administrators. That's also kshatriya duty. We're advised by the brahmanas. But when you mix both duties, it's very hard to do both properly. Like Prabhupada could do both properly. But he was a transcendental personality. But as far as any of us, it's very hard. I mean, I experience this all the time, because I'm GBC, you know, which is an administrative position. At the same time, you know, the guru position, you know, all these different lines of authority, so to speak. It's very difficult to balance them properly. Or, you know, what hat are you wearing today? Like if you go to the temple president, what hat are you wearing today? My advisor, my mentor, or my boss? It'd be like going to the business place. Let's say you go to work for FEA. You know, the electricity company here. And your boss is also your guru. It's very hard, isn't it? What's that? Real quick, Virginia.
What is the role of GBC?
What about the GBC? The GBC is supposed to be the ultimate managing authority of the Krishna consciousness movement. The way Prabhupada established it is we have a clear line of authority. Everyone works under the GBC body. And if one GBC member is off, the body actually is the highest authority. The body itself of... So that's ISKCON's system. That's what Prabhupada wanted. Prabhupada didn't want some autocratic leader of ISKCON. Prabhupada didn't want some big acharya. The acharya system doesn't work within ISKCON, within a worldwide movement. What? What? The GBC is the boss. Whether you like it or not, Nishina, I'm your boss. So, and if you don't like it, you can appeal to the whole GBC. You said, my boss is bossing me around too much. He's torturing me. So, but I don't think I do that too much. So, so it's a clear line of authority. But sometimes those lines become very much confused. I hate to mention this, but I'll mention it. Like in Fiji, you have this also the trustee situation, which confuses this line of authority. You understand what I mean? It confuses it, and sometimes you become stymied, you become frozen, you can't accomplish something that you would want. So that's really counter to Prabhupada's system. Prabhupada wanted, as far as the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is concerned, the GBC line of authority, GBC body, individual GBC, regional secretary, temple president, temple commander, all the way down to the pot washer. So that when you have a clear line of authority like that, then there's no confusion. But when you have like a parallel line, which is, you know, somewhat what we have here, is a parallel line. We have other parallel lines too. Like we have the guru line, that's what we're discussing in ISKCON right now. You have the gurus who sometimes try to usurp the authority of the temple presidents. You understand? We don't have that problem here in Fiji. But in certain cases, the guru will come to a temple and say to the disciple, the temple president, you don't have to listen to him, I'm your guru. When you go on Sankirtan, give me all the money. So you'll have that. But that's not good. The guru should also work under that line of authority. And we're discussing that in ISKCON right now. But there has to be one clear line of authority. If there's not, then all sorts of irreligious principles will manifest themselves in the name of religiosity. Okay. Or we have to end class because it's time to greet the deities. The deities are the boss.
The deities are the boss.
The deities are the boss. They're the ultimate boss. We all work for Krishna.